This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica stations, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Among the terrifying things that Donald Trump's Electoral College victory has unleashed is any sense of propriety that the anti-abortion politicians have had. In Texas, in particular, state legislators have pre-filed a whopping 600 bills eroding women's rights to reproductive health care. Some of those bills propose banning what is already prohibited at the federal level, suggesting there is a level of political posturing at work. And among the bills is a ghastly requirement for fetal tissue to be given a funeral. Nationally, Trump is considering GOP Representative Tom Price of Georgia for the position of Secretary of Health and Human Services. Price has a singularly consistent record of voting against federal support for women's reproductive services. My guest is Imani Gandhi. She is the Senior Legal Analyst for Rewire News. Welcome to the program, Imani.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Let's focus on Texas first. The sheer number of bills is kind of mind-boggling, and Texas has been, of course, on the forefront of curbing women's access to reproductive health care for years now. What do you make of this unleashing of these bills? Is it directly linked, you think, to Trump's election?
Absolutely. I think that they now feel emboldened to enact even more regressive and restrictive policies that will decimate access to abortion. And I think that they are going to feel more willing to pass laws that are flatly unconstitutional under the current rubric of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, in the hopes that by the time the case reaches the Supreme Court, two justices may have retired and Trump may have replaced them by conservative justices, which would give the court conservative leaning and might give them what they need in order to overturn Roe versus Wade.
So some of these bills, it is hoped by Texas, will reach the Supreme Court and be a direct challenge to Roe. That's the end game?
I think that is, you know, the anti-choicers are approaching this in a multi-pronged way. So in one respect, they're trying to reduce abortion access at the state level. But in another respect, their goal really is to overturn Roe versus Wade and to make abortion, to criminalize abortion at the federal level. I mean, we see this with I think what we're going to see is a resurgence of personhood amendments. Texas already has one that they've pre-filed that would essentially make eggs people, you know, that would extend the liberty of life to fertilized embryos, essentially. And I think that personhood amendments have been routinely introduced at the congressional level, and they just didn't have enough support. But with Republicans controlling both houses and with the anti-abortion crusader that we have in Mike Pence, I think that we will start to see laws being passed at the federal and at the state level that will question and challenge Roe versus Wade.
Right. Mike Pence, of course, being the governor of Indiana before Vice President-elect, Indiana was the state where we saw Purvi Patel being imprisoned with a sentence of 20 years for essentially having a miscarriage, one of the few places where this idea of fetal personhood was taken to such great lengths. Let's talk about staying on Texas. Some of the bills that have been introduced in Texas are trying to ban things that are already banned at the federal level, such as a partial birth abortion ban. What's going on here?
I honestly think that they are just trying to throw everything at the wall to make it clear that this is going to be their mission. It doesn't make any sense for them to be filing, the DNX abortion bans. But
and can you explain that, the DNX abortion ban? What does that mean exactly?
Oh, that's the sort of the technical term for what came to be known as partial birth abortion, which is when you sort of deconstruct the fetus in the uterus before removing it. It's just a terminology that has no real medical basis, but which was used in order to inflame sort of the public's discussed about what abortion procedures entail. And I think they play on that, which is kind of interesting because in my view, almost any medical procedure that requires cutting someone open or requires any sort of surgical procedure is going to be a bit gruesome. I mean, heart transplants, for example, I'm sure are plenty gruesome. But when it comes to abortion, there's this view that because, you know, the fetus is a precious life, that requires imposing further regulations, extra regulations above and beyond those that are imposed upon other surgical and medical procedures.
Right. And we may.
But, yeah, so I think that, you know, part of it is just they want to sort of make it clear that they are against abortion and they're going to ban every form of abortion that they can. They're going to implement any sort of regulations that they can, that they can get away with. And as we've seen over the past couple of years, I know a lot of states have, for example, a 24-hour waiting period. Then that was bumped up to 48, and now certain states have 72-hour waiting periods. I would not be surprised if we start to see waiting periods that are even longer, you know, 3, 4, 5 day waiting periods, just to make sure that women have that extra week that they need to make sure that they want to do what they've already decided that they want to do.
Right.
The other thing I think we're going to start seeing nationwide, even more so than the 14 states that already have these bans in place, are 20-week abortion bans. And 20-week abortion bans under the current constitutional rubric are unconstitutional. And so I can envision a world where a 20-week abortion ban lawsuit winds its way through the federal courts and makes it to the Supreme Court and prompts the court to have to address this issue of whether or not they're going to go back on Roe or whether they're going to maintain the current rubric. And as for what I think is one of the most pernicious bills to come out of Texas is this bill that requires fetal remains to be buried.
The fetal burial bill. This, I know, sounded absolutely horrifying. Yes, tell us about this.
It's just a bill that requires the death certificates and either the burial or cremation of fetal remains. So that means whether or not the fetal remains are from an abortion or whether they're from a spontaneous miscarriage, because there are a lot of women that endure spontaneous miscarriages, for example, at home. So does that mean we're now going to start applying civil or criminal liability to women who miscarry? I mean, I think that these bills are not really written by politicians in the first place. They're written by think tanks, places like Americans United for Life. And so what happens is these bills, these model bills, get spread throughout the country, and then politicians just latch onto them, not really having any sense of what the bills say and not really having any sense of what the end result of such a bill would be, the sort of slippery slope argument. So
Right. When
they say what their initial idea is, that they don't want to treat fetal remains as medical waste, because that's how they are treated right now by hospitals. They want to elevate the fetus into something a little bit more important, a little bit more a little bit more important than just plain old medical waste. So what they're trying to do is give a burial service to, you know, an aborted fetus. But they haven't thought about what happens when there are fetal remains that are unrelated to an abortion. And so I think that's the problem that we have with these medical bills, is that these politicians just aren't thinking them through. They don't know what's in them. And then women, as a result, suffer.
And
people as a result.
Bills like this really give lie to the argument that many GOP pro-abortion advocates say, which is that they are simply interested in the health of the mother. A lot of these bills have been put forward claiming that they're interested in protecting women and protecting the mother, requiring women who have abortions or miscarriages to bury or cremate their fetal remains has nothing to do with the health of the mother. And if anything, doesn't it increase the cost of having an abortion? If you had to have a funeral, funerals are expensive, not to mention
Absolutely.
They're also sort of emotionally just so offensive to require a funeral for the remains of your abortion. But couldn't it also be prohibitive in terms of cost for women if such a bill were to go through?
Absolutely, it would be prohibitive in cost. I mean, the tactics of anti-choicers already ratchet up the cost of abortions for women. You know, the waiting periods ratchet up costs because women, you know, 67% of women who have abortions already have children. So it may require finding care for the children that you do have so you can travel several hundred miles to a clinic and stay there for 3 days while you go through the counseling period and the informed consent period before finally getting to the procedure. And then if you add on top of that, the cost of burying the fetal remains, it just, it becomes prohibitively expensive. And because of the access issues, a lot of women are forced to delay the procedure until they can come up with the money to pay for it. And the further along you are in the pregnancy, the more expensive it is to terminate. So it becomes prohibitively expensive to the point where women end up having children that they can't afford to have, and then it just sinks them into poverty. So, you know, I have to push back on any politician or anyone who seems to think that these anti-choice laws are about protecting women. They're not about protecting women. We saw in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt that the admitting privileges requirements and the retrofitting requirements for clinics were purported to have been out of the interests of women. But if you look at, you know, Greg Abbott, the current governor of Texas, Greg Abbott was elated when the Fifth Circuit upheld HB2 and said something to the effect of, this will reduce abortions in Texas. Not, this will help the women of Texas get mm-hmm. safe abortion care, but this will reduce the number of abortions. So their end goal is to simply decimate abortion, whether it's through the courts or whether it's through access and burdensome regulation. That's what they're going to do. And I think that anyone who thinks that this has anything to do with women is sorely mistaken, especially because now they are going to start forcing women who have pregnancies that are unviable to maintain those pregnancies. So they're going to ban abortion after 20 weeks, even in cases of fetal abnormalities, which means you're forcing women who want to have these babies to carry an unviable fetus to term only to see it die once it's born. I mean, that is truly cruelty is what that is. And anyone who says that this is about women's health and about protecting women is just kidding themselves, right. I think.
Now, Texas Lieutenant Governor Patrick Stewart has made many open statements as well. Let's talk about those bills that have been introduced on this issue of buying or selling human fetal tissue. This, of course, is in reference to the undercover videos of Planned Parenthood officials that claimed that Planned Parenthood was engaged in the trafficking of fetal tissue, even though that was thoroughly discredited after many, many hours wasted at the congressional level and testimonies. It's not really a thing, buying and selling a fetal tissue, is it? Yet there are attempts to have bills legislating this and regulating it, right? I mean, what's the use of this?
Yeah, it's just a waste of taxpayer money. It's a waste of time. I mean, the rules were already very explicit about what sort of reimbursement could be made for fetal tissue, for the removal of fetal tissue. And it's simply a matter of reimbursing the costs that the cost of the actual procedure. I mean, for example, if there's a three-car pileup on the freeway and one of the passengers has died and has a perfectly viable heart and there's someone in a hospital somewhere waiting for a heart transplant, there are actually costs involved with getting that heart from the wreckage of the car to the hospital. And those are the types of costs that were reimbursable to Planned Parenthood. But that, of course, became blown way out of proportion by, you know, David DeLaden and the Center for Medical Progress, who edited these videotapes and these audio tapes to make it seem as if Planned Parenthood staff members were trying to, you know, sell black market fetal tissue, you know, for pennies on the dollar on some website somewhere. I mean, the very idea is ludicrous. I saw numbers where people were saying that, you know, Planned Parenthood is selling baby heads for $100. I mean, first of all, it's ludicrous to think that Planned Parenthood is selling baby heads. Second of all, if you're in the business of human organ trafficking, I'm pretty sure you're not settling for a mere $100 per removed part. So these conspiracy theories don't make any sense on any level. But with the election of President Trump, we're going to see a push to reopen those committees. They're probably going to haul Cecile Richards in front of another congressional panel
to
answer
questions. She's the head of Planned Parenthood.
Cecile Richards, who's the head of Planned Parenthood, to answer questions about how much money she makes and how many abortions are performed at particular clinics, because they're not really concerned about this allegation that Planned Parenthood is selling fetal tissue. They're concerned about ways to make sure that government funds are not allotted to Planned Parenthood anymore.
So let's talk about Trump specifically. We remember during the campaign when asked about abortions, he discussed how women ought to, you know, there ought to be some sort of form of punishment for women who have abortions. In the last debate that he had with Hillary Clinton, he raised this, I think, wholly dishonest and made up idea about abortions in the eighth month, where fetuses are ripped out of women's bodies. And it was just unbelievable that a person who, you know, was supposed to be taken seriously would say all of these things. And then, of course, he went on to win the Electoral College. What? How sincere is Donald Trump, you think, on the pro, or rather the anti-abortion tip? Because way in the past, he had once been a supporter of Planned Parenthood. He's certainly not coming from a Christian evangelical movement. He's someone who's, you know, very, his wife is a model who's, you know, posed nude. And, you know, he's definitely not somebody who has that same moralistic bent that a lot of the anti-abortion crowd does.
Right. I think that Donald Trump is concerned about Donald Trump. At the beginning of the Republican primary, my position at the time, before, you know, more information painting Donald Trump in this horrible light came to light, my position was Donald Trump was the best out of all, you know, the entire 17 person slate of candidates, because I don't think he really cares. He's not a hardliner. He's not a true believer in anti-choice politics. As you said, he did support Planned Parenthood. I think his hard shift to this rhetoric about punishing women for abortion is because, in order to gain certain constituencies, he has to be seen as being a hardline anti-choicer. I don't think he personally is, but again, it doesn't much matter how he personally feels if he's surrounding himself with people like Mike Pence, with people like, you know, I know he had meetings with Jerry Falwell earlier this week, people who are so
and they posed next to his Playboy magazine cover or something like that when he took a picture.
Right. I mean, I just think that, you know, abortion is such a controversial issue. It's been a controversial issue for 40 years. The anti-choice lobbyists are very, very powerful. And if Trump feels like he can make himself look good in front of whomever he feels he needs to look good in front of, then Trump will go along with defunding Planned Parenthood and passing, you know, he will sign a federal 20-week ban, and he'll sign, you know, a federal quote-unquote dismemberment abortion ban, and they'll sign all sorts of bills that he may not personally really care about. And so I think that, I don't know if that makes it better or makes it worse, but it certainly doesn't change the reality of the landscape of reproductive rights in this country right now.
Right. It would be interesting to see what happens when someone from his family needs an abortion, because as we know, politicians are routinely pretty two-faced about these sorts of things. Imani, is rewire.news the best place to read your writings?
Yes, rewire.news.
Imani, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Imani Gandhi is the senior legal analyst with Rewire News. Again, that website is rewire.news. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali. Thank you so much, Imani. Really loved having you on.